Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon or just through restaurantguysradio.com. Morning, Francis.
Hello there, Mark.
How you doing, pal?
I'm doing great this morning.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is it because of the big, big news today?
Karl Rove? Did he go to a restaurant or something?
7-Eleven's back in Manhattan.
Oh, I did read that.
That's
huge.
Come on.
Yeah.
Huge, they're back.
Yeah. Actually, 7-Eleven is going into major cities across the world, and you may not realize this out there, but they sort of abandoned the city market, and they've sort of camped out in the suburbs and rural areas. You know, can we digress from 7-Eleven for just a moment?
Sure.
Because I have to say...
We can do anything we want. It's our show.
We got an hour, as long as it takes less than an hour. I have to say that in the world of convenience stores, I really am glad that we live in the state that has a Wawa.
Why is that?
Because I like to say that. And did you know that in the town of Mawa, there is a Wawa? So that would be the Mawa Wawa?
Francis, I want to say something to you.
Back to the show, huh?
No.
Okay.
You know I love you, right?
Yeah.
You're a total idiot.
Sometimes. But it's fun to say. I'll meet you at the Mawa Wawa, Mark. 7-Eleven is going out throughout the world.
I feel like you set me up.
Even in Japan. And they're going into urban markets. And they're finding, and this is really interesting, they're finding that they're serving a great purpose in Japan. There are twice as many 7-Elevens in Japan as there are...
As in the entire United States.
Isn't that crazy?
That's bizarre.
And, you know, I guess lots of chili dogs going
out. What they say in Japan is that they're using the 7-Eleven as an extension of their refrigerator. You're going to say something in some
fake
Japanese
voice, aren't you? I was going to try and fake it. I was going to do that.
It's so predictable.
But I was afraid.
But literally, they're saying they're using it as an extension of their refrigerator.
Yeah.
The 7-Eleven.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, they say that, and that's really related to something that goes on in New York. If you read all the books about New York and about cocktails and the cocktail culture in New York and about the bar culture, especially in New York, New York was always this where the most vibrant bar culture had always been in America. And the reason was and continues to be that space is so tight in New York that, you know, in the suburbs you say, okay, well, let's all 10 of us meet at my house. We'll have a cocktail, and then maybe we'll go out to the movies. Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? If you live in your one-bedroom or two-bedroom apartment in New York with all your belongings...
Right. And your bed is in the living room.
Right, exactly. You don't do that. And so your local tavern becomes... You know, New Yorkers use the bar as the tavern, not just a place to go get drunk, but you know, they may not even drink very much, but it's the extension of your living room. And I can see why in a city like Tokyo... Where, you know, there's just not that much space that you would... It'd be nice to have a 7-Eleven around, unfortunately.
Sure, more likely to have that kind of situation when you can reach your dishwasher from your bed.
Yeah, exactly. So. But the thing about the 7-Eleven and what's unfortunate about that, I mean, we have in New York, and I had an apartment in New York for many years, and I live in Jersey City now, and that's an urban environment as well. And what is really nice about living in a city is if you decide you want pancakes at 2 a.m. delivered to your house,
right,
or pierogies or sushi, you can call somebody and it'll show up in about
15
minutes.
I can make pancakes at my house at 2 a.m.
But you can't make somebody else bring them to you. You know?
You can if you're six.
And the 24-hour... The presence of 24-hour places in New York and the city that never sleeps is, you know, that's always been there. But I can see where if there's a void in a city like Tokyo or in cities throughout Japan, why 7-Eleven would have such appeal. Unfortunately, most of the food that's available hot and ready to go is garbage.
It's not so good.
It's not going to make you healthy. It's not whale burgers, but it's not going to make you healthy. You know,
maybe they do have whale burgers at the 7-Eleven.
And again, we have to point out that, you know, with the way that American food has gone, especially the big companies, and the way that 7-Eleven has made their mark and the fast food companies have made their mark, is with the huge size, oversized, supersize. Mm-hmm. More is not necessarily better, okay? Oh, wow, you mean I can get a 16-ounce soda for a dollar, and a 35-ounce soda is $1.05.
Definitely we are the biggest more culture.
Why do you want? The question is, why do you want a 34-ounce soda? Save the nickel, you know? Save the nickel, save some years off your life.
But you're not calculating the per-ounce cost, Francis.
Yeah, but you know what
brings the per-ounce cost. Now, what you should do is buy one of those 64-ounce sodas
and give it to your friends.
And split it with 15 people.
Exactly.
That's what you should do.
When we were kids, I don't remember people buying 2-liter bottles of soda and drinking the whole thing.
I remember it was a big deal when 2-liter bottle sodas became available.
Yeah.
I remember that
but
as a little kid.
There wasn't a one-serving container is the problem.
Right.
And, you know, look, we're not about about being Spartan. Let's just say we're not about being Spartan. We certainly believe in enjoying life and living life and doing some things that are bad for you. I smoke a cigar once in a while. I, you know, go out. I have drinks once in a while.
You
eat foie gras once in a while. Well, more than once in a while. But
I'm not working with you anymore.
But the idea of that, why are you going to waste that on a 64-ounce thing of soda, on a supersized thing of Laffy Taffy, if you're going for the calories, don't waste it on a Twinkie.
It's true, because as you know, that I'm a very big guy, but I just refuse to waste calories on soda. I refuse.
And the problem is that we are raising our kids today where this is the culture. And you know what? You talk to your kids however many hours a day that you talk to your kids, the advertisers talk to your kids more. And they tell them what's cool. And kids want to do what they think is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And these people spend a lot of money to teach them that you're cool if you can drink a whole 64-ounce soda. Let me give you a quote.
This is great. You're going to read from the article?
Yeah.
This is a question from the New York Times to 7-Eleven. Aside from the Slurpees, several 7-Eleven label products emphasize their size. The Big Gulp deli items, Big Eats Bakery, Big Bite Grill items. Is big what you think Americans want?
Answer.
Why don't you answer, Francis?
Our definition of big means more quality and popularity, if you will. It's kind of an attention getter, a brand name that we started using in the 60s and 70s. And it stuck, so it's a trademark. But it's definitely not intended to portray, in all cases, large.
So big doesn't mean large now?
You lying piece of garbage. I mean, you know, call it what it is. Yeah, it's big. It's fat. We're trying to make your kids fat. And
they're not trying to make your kids fat. They're trying to sell as much product as they possibly can. But to actually say
big doesn't mean big.
New York Times, big does not mean large.
That was a quote from James W. Keyes, the chief executive of 7-Eleven, who's nominated for a Toady Award. He'll be up in the next run-in
and
from
us. And fat doesn't mean chubby.
Right. And tall doesn't mean tall. It means short. That's right. That's all I have on 7-Eleven. That's all I have.
I'm glad, because we're done with 7-Eleven. You're dead to us.
Speaking of big, just a very quick note. Did you see that Snapple tried to erect the world's biggest popsicle in New York City last
week? Big is more, baby. Snapple.
You know what happened?
I do know what happened.
It melted. They had to call the fire department.
It melted. They tried to get into Guinness Book of World Records for largest popsicle in the world. Melted. Broke. Pink juice all over Fifth
Snapple,
Avenue.
Snapple, they had to call the fire department because Snapple juice was flowing down Fifth Avenue.
Pink Snapple juice all over Fifth Avenue.
We'll give you more on that story in just a moment. We'll be back in a few moments, and we're going to actually talk about where big is not necessarily more and where overhydration can actually get you into trouble when you're exercising. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys. This is Francis Schott, and we were talking earlier. I just mentioned earlier that there was a giant popsicle that melted in New York City last week, and I have to give you the lowdown on it. You see, Snapple was doing a publicity stunt, and they wanted to get in the Guinness Book of World Records for erecting the largest popsicle in history.
They are in the Guinness Book of World Records now, you know.
For what?
For the largest popsicle breaking in New York City.
And the thing melted on them, and I love this. Snapple officials first started to worry when pink liquid began to flow onto East 17th Street. Snapple officials then decided to stop the Snapple raising. At a crowd disappointing 25-degree angle, the fire department was called, and the news release was, a giant popsicle being displayed by Snapple has melted in the heat and sun and spilled all over 17th Street. The fire department's on the scene and attempting to wash down the roadway. Sticky goo all over area.
It's hysterical. I love the, what went wrong? Response from Snapple people. It got mushy. That's great stuff.
Well, you know, in the idea of big is more and overdoing things, one of the things that is a common misconception that has also been written about a lot in the newspaper is that when you're exercising, you need to hydrate. You need to drink as much water as possible. And actually, there have been a lot of studies come out recently that show you that that can actually get you into trouble. And so we have with us Dr. Jack Kripczak, who is the director of sports medicine for Somerset Medical Center, which is a great organization right here locally, to talk with us about this very issue. Dr. Jack, are you with us?
I'm here.
Hi, Doc. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. It's an honor to be on the air with you guys.
Well, gosh.
An honor. Wow.
An absolute pleasure and honor.
Well, Dr. Jack, we've read a lot about recently, there have been a lot of articles written about drinking too many fluids, and people are actually at more of a risk of overhydrating themselves when they exercise strenuously than they are of underhydrating themselves. What's the story with that?
Well, you know, it's an interesting concept, Francis, because, you know, probably the bigger concern is that people don't drink enough.
Right. Uh-huh.
And for years there's been this debate, you know, what should you drink? Do you drink water? Do you drink a sport drink like Powerade, Gatorade, All Sport? Are you drinking orange juice, fruit juice? And the thing is, you have to maintain, the goal always is when you're exercising, especially in warm weather, is to stay adequately hydrated, because a greater problem is to become dehydrated.
Uh-huh.
And
right.
Then you notice that with athletes. I don't know if you went to last year's, I know you guys are big Rutgers guys and Rutgers alumni, and, mm-hmm. and last year at the Rutgers-Michigan State game, they were dragging those poor Michigan State kids off the field throughout the third and fourth quarter. I think they dragged one wide receiver off like four times because of all the muscle cramps he was getting
right.
from dehydration. And
uh-huh.
you've heard about the Dallas Cowboys drinking pickle juice so that they wouldn't get cramps. And
I haven't. You got to explain that one to me, Jack.
I'd rather have cramps, I think.
So the emphasis is always on.
Hold on, Jack. I'm not letting you go.
You got to go back to the Dallas Cowboys.
What's with the pickle juice?
Because I'm a football fan, and I have no idea what you're talking about.
They were, you know, there was this thing that the Dallas Cowboys a few years ago were drinking pickle juices so they would stay adequately hydrated with enough sodium in their system so that they wouldn't get muscle cramps.
Why pickle juice?
Because it's high in sodium. You know,
why not just have salty water?
Well, you know, Francis, you know, being a wine guy, you can appreciate this.
Yeah.
When you're growing grapes for wine,
yeah.
you want that right concentration of sugars in that
yeah,
grape.
Yeah, true,
right?
true. Uh-huh.
If you have too much water in that grape, it's not a wine grape. It's a table grape.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
So that's how our body is. We just have to have the right consistency of sodium, potassium, chloride, sugar in our body, and that's what we need to maintain a homeostatic or balance in our system.
So what you're saying is when you add that extra fluid in, you also have to add the other things in equal proportion or in the right proportion for your body.
Exactly, because here's what happens, especially, you know, with what we see with high school kids and college athletes, and there's NCAA guidelines actually now for the amount of training that the football players can do. When they come out into fall practice, when they come out, like, they're going to be starting up next month in August, and these kids are going to be starting to work out one a day, two a day
mm-hmm.
in the hot sun. And
say three a day, Jack. I played football. I remember.
Right. You know what? And they've been hanging out during the summer, you know, in an air-conditioned gym working out, maybe playing some Sony PlayStation, going over to the girlfriend's house, swimming by the pool. And all of a sudden, they're out in the hot sun all the time. And they won't be what we call acclimatized,
mm-hmm.
which means
uh-huh.
your body hasn't gotten used to the heat. And that takes around 7 to 10 days of working out 2 hours a day in the sun in the warmer temperatures. So if the temperature goes up by more than 10 degrees, you better exercise at least, you know, at least 2 hours a day in that heat to get used to it.
Right.
So what happens to your body when you're not used to it? You don't retain the right amount of water? What happens to you?
You sweat a lot, okay? Uh-huh. And when you're not acclimatized, your sweat is very sodium concentrated. You lose more salt in your sweat initially.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So one of the problems with the hyponatremia or the decreased sodium in your system is that you're losing too much salt initially. And then if you drink just water, you're not replacing that salt.
So you're diluting the salt that's left in your body even further.
Correct. It's a double whammy.
So,
okay?
so
and then
ahead,
what
Jeff.
Happens is you'll get headaches, you'll get nauseousness, and then do you guys remember when you were in high school, you used to have like biology class, and you'd have those two cells with one would have water in it, one would have salt water in it, and there was like a semi-permeable
right.
membrane in between,
right.
and the water flowed to the side where there was more salt.
By osmosis.
Osmosis, exactly. Right. So when your sodium gets too low, in your bloodstream, mm-hmm. then the water starts to shift to the more concentrated organs. And that's why your hands and feet will start to swell. And the most dangerous thing is it starts to flow into the brain, and your brain starts to swell. And if your sodium gets too low and the water shifts into your brain, then that can lead to death.
Well, death is a very bad thing that we want to avoid. And we want to talk to you a little bit more, Dr. Jack. We're talking with Dr. Jack Kripsak, who's the director of sports medicine for Somerset Medical Center, about how to keep yourself hydrated in this heat and when you exercise.
And the kinds of things you should be drinking.
And how to avoid drinking too much plain water. And we'll be talking with that more in just a minute. Will you come back and talk with us just a little further about this and give us some more clues and hints?
It would be my pleasure.
Great. Well, we're going to wait, and I am actually curious to see how this actually works and what the implications are of what's going on in our body.
Right.
We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
You're back with The Restaurant Guys. We are talking with Dr. Jack Kripsak, who is the Director of Sports Medicine at Somerset Medical Center, and we're talking about all the articles that have been out about how you have to worry about getting dehydrated when you exercise in the hot weather, but how you also might suffer from hyponatremia. So
Jack, I have a question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
When I was playing football back in high school a gazillion years ago, they used to warn us about losing too much salt.
But one
of the things they said was they would give salt to the skinny kids, but they would not give any to the fat kids. Why didn't they give the fat kids salt?
That's a good observation, Mark, because the heavier kids really don't lose as much salt.
Mm-hmm.
All right, they have a larger body mass, and they have more fluid in their body, and they're able to retain more water.
Interesting.
With the skinnier kids, they tend not to filter the blood through their kidneys as quickly, and they retain some dilute water,
mm-hmm.
and then that gets into the bloodstream, and that's how the blood becomes dilute.
So hold on.
Very good observation.
So what you've heard from Dr. Jack Kripsak here on The Restaurant Guys is that in this one area, it's better to be fat than skinny.
well, not too, because the heavier kids are also more likely to get the heat stroke.
Well, that's a whole different set of problems now, Jack.
Yes. You got to give Marcus crumbs when they fall, Dr. Jack.
We always have to maintain that balance. You know, Shangri-La, all things in moderation.
Now, Dr. Jack, when we drink when we're exercising and we're out there in the hot sun today, I mean, is it does it make sense to just have a little bit of salt in the water? Would that help us, or do
you know, Francis, this is what I tell everybody, and I'm gonna refer to a study that was done out at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado. They took a group of scientists out there, and they took four groups of individuals, and they were cyclists, and they put them on a stationary bike and exercised them for quite a length of time. And the one group was given just water to drink, one group was given sugar water to drink, one was given salt water to drink, and one group was given sugar salt water to drink. The group of individuals that absorbed the fluid through their intestines and into their bloodstream the most efficiently was the sugar and salt water group.
Interesting.
The sugar and salt combination, you know, Gatorade always talks about replacing your electrolytes.
Mm-hmm.
The sodium, potassium, and sugar combo creates like a little electric charge which drives the fluid back into the bloodstream more quickly.
And so these sports drinks really have merit.
Absolutely. There is no doubt about it. I mean, what I tell my athletes in my high schools that I take care of, you should drink about 24 ounces of Gatorade 2 hours before you exercise, about another 8 to 12, a half hour before you exercise, and then another 4 ounces every 15 minutes or so that you do exercise. And this is particularly important on a hot day where you're going to be sweating, and particularly important during the early part of the season when you have not acclimatized and your sweat's going to be more concentrated.
Dr. Jack, you have just enlightened us tremendously about
how
to deal with this weather. This is really interesting.
That's great.
Oh, it's my pleasure, fellas.
Thanks for taking the
thanks
time.
Thanks for being our guest. We'll make sure we get you back next sports medicine question we have.
Anytime from my favorite guys from my favorite restaurant.
We love
that's
you,
great.
Dr. Jack.
Have a good weekend.
Take
fellas.
Care. That's okay, Dr. Jack. Right. That's Dr. Jack Kripsak, the Director of Sports Medicine at Somerset Medical Center. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon through restaurantguysradio.com.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Francis. We spoke last half hour with Dr. Jack Kubsack, who is the director of sports medicine for Somerset Medical Center. And he's a really great guy and a very good doctor who's got a lot of specialty in sports, and he talked to us about how to hydrate, and I think we're going to stick on that theme today.
Hydrating.
We talked in yesterday's show about going to the fancy food show in New York, where we found a whole bunch of really mediocre products sweetened with high fructose corn syrup that were more about packaging than about substance. And we don't like to be negative too many days in a row.
All about what was on the bottle instead of what was in the bottle.
And so we thought we would talk to, we would address a product that we think is doing great stuff, a product that we believe in. And that product you may have seen out on the shelves recently. It's a relatively new brand. It's called Honest Tea, and it's a line of iced teas. And it's made by a couple of guys, Barry Nalibuff, I don't know if I pronounced that correctly, and Seth Goldman, who started their small company about 7-8 years ago. And it's really great stuff. And so we got Seth Goldman to come and agree to talk to us about his product. Seth, are you here?
Good to be with you guys.
Hi, morning, Seth.
Great. Doing well.
Well, you know, this we don't do infomercials. This is not infomercial radio. But one of the reasons that we really liked your product and we asked you to come on to the show is because we like your product. Now, we run a restaurant. We run a high-end restaurant. We make our own iced tea in-house when we want to make iced tea, so we don't even carry your product.
Right.
But we really appreciate it, and we like it. We like how it tastes. We respect how it's made the more we've learned about it. But it struck us. One of the things that Mark and I do when we're out looking to buy packaged products is we look at the ingredients. And we noticed right away that you don't use high fructose corn syrup to sweeten your teas and your beverages. Why is that?
Well, for a lot of the things you say, you know, high fructose corn syrup is sort of the lowest common denominator among beverages. It's the cheapest, and it also is the one that, from a health perspective, it doesn't trigger the body's sort of glycemic indicators. And so that means that you can drink more. You're basically taking in more calories before your body starts to tell you, "Hey, okay, enough already."
Enough calories.
We've had a couple of food science PhDs on who've told us about that very thing. That fructose, one of the things about using high fructose corn syrup, is that it makes you want more.
Yep.
Whereas if you use sugar, you'll say, "Oh, that's fine, and that's all the sweetness."
Well, sugar you crave more, but not nearly to the same degree as high fructose corn syrup.
Right, and it's one of the reasons that soft drinks are the single largest source of sugar in the American diet.
Yep.
But what we did is we said, "Well, okay, let's think. Are there other alternatives to high fructose corn syrup? Because everyone's using it. We figured maybe there aren't." And as we started looking, we've just been amazed with what we found. So obviously, the first one. Is organic cane sugar. That's something we use, but also honey.
I've seen you use maple syrup.
Maple syrup. Another one we use is organic brown rice syrup.
Interesting.
Which is a really nice flavor to it, and a lot more complex from a flavor, you know, perspective.
What does that do to the tea flavor?
It gives it a nice, dark, rich taste, almost malty.
Mm-hmm. You know what, Seth? I have to tell you, I hate to make fun of a product, but I'll make fun of a commercial.
You love making fun of products. It's one of your favorite things to do. You're actually a little upset that Seth is on the radio because there's nothing to make fun of there.
You may be correct on that. But do you remember the old Country Time lemonade commercials?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And they'd be like
that good old-fashioned lemonade.
Right. They'd be like an old man with a fishing pole and his grandson on the prairie and the house, you know.
Just like Grandma used to stir.
Right. And they borrowed the set from Little House on the Prairie to shoot that. You know, Michael Landon was taking a cigarette break in the back. And they would say, oh, well, it's country time lemonade. It's just like your grandma used to make.
Good old-fashioned lemonade.
My grandmother never used high fructose corn syrup. Did yours?
Exactly.
No, she had a little container in the up in the pantry that she'd use.
That's the amazing thing about tea. This is a drink that's been around for 5,700 years,
mm-hmm.
and it's only in the last, really the last 30 years that someone had the, you know, genius to take the word, you know, this ancient drink and say, hey, let's make it better by putting in high fructose corn syrup.
Well, let's move on to some of the other problems with some of the other bottled teas that we've all experienced is that most teas are made from sawdust. Okay, or
Seth, why don't you expand on what Mark just said?
It's funny. This whole idea, and even the name for honest tea, came from my partner, Barry, who used to be my business school professor, went to India, and he was doing a case study of the tea industry, and he went to the auctions, and he saw that the tea producers were taking all the best leaves and packaging them up, and they would go to an auction, and basically what was left over, which was really sort of the dust, or they call it fannings, was sort of loaded up, you know, put in a box, and that was
marked shipped to America.
Yeah. It's like, you know, what's left over. And so as a result, most of what we get in the U.S. for bottled tea is tea in the same way that the fish fillet is a fish. You know, you don't see those little squares swimming around in the ocean. And so we go to the bottling plants all the time. And so what we see when a lot of these bottled tea brands go there, it comes in a, you know, in dry powder.
Mm-hmm.
And you add water and stir, and that's what people call tea.
So what do you do?
What we do is going right back to how tea is supposed to be made. We bring in tea leaves and we put them in a big infuser. So we take boiling water, and we brew these leaves, and then we have to, you know, take out the leaves, and that extraction is the tea that's left, and that is the way. You know, certainly when you think about hot tea, that's how it's made.
Just to give everybody a little bit of background. You have the whole tea leaf, and your best teas come from whole tea leaf.
Right.
Then you have kind of tea parts, broken up tea leaves. Sometimes you'll get that in your tea bags and things like that. Mm-hmm. Then you have a kind of even lower grade of that goes into your kind of generic tea bags. And then you have the dust that we were talking about earlier that goes into your pre-made tea mixes.
That's right. That's right.
So let me get this straight. You make tea by putting boiling water on tea leaves.
Right.
Revolutionary.
You are a genius.
I wonder why it tastes so good. Where did you come up with that? So, obviously, this is a lot more expensive way to do it. Weren't you afraid that, you know, if all these big corporations aren't doing it and are having much greater success, including, you know, Snapple and whoever, just making tea from tea powder, tea syrup, tea dust,
right,
whatever.
Right.
I mean, how much would you say more it costs to make tea your way as opposed to that way?
Well, here's the thing. We absolutely do. We spend probably four times what our competitors spend on their tea ingredient. But the thing about tea is that
that's 9 cents.
Well, it's one of the world's most affordable luxuries.
Uh-huh.
And so you can get very high-quality tea for pennies a bottle.
Yeah.
You know, if we were making wine of the same caliber, it would be, you know, hundreds of dollars a bottle. But what we decided to do was, all right, let's not spend a lot of money on our bottle, because that's what a lot of, you know, you've seen these bottles that look like pieces of art, so,
sure,
you know, with the wrap around them and all that. So we said, we're not going to spend a lot of money on the bottle. We're going to spend money on the tea, and we're going to keep it simple. And since we use a lot less sweetener, because we use just about our teas usually have anywhere between sort of 17 to 30 calories. So we're going to save money on the sweetener. Even though we're going to use a more expensive sweetener, we're not going to use as much of it.
Right.
So it is certainly more expensive than the big brands, but it's not out of control. It's really at a place where it can be. You know, we like to be within range of.
I mean, the Arizonas and the Snapples are pretty expensive.
Yeah.
We're talking with Seth Goldman, who's the co-founder of Honest Tea, probably one of the tea companies out there, bottle tea companies with the most integrity. And we're going to talk with him when we come back about how he had this idea that he took to quitting his day job, made a bunch of tea in his kitchen, sold it to Soul Foods, and now is running a really important company. And we're going to talk more with him in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, and we are here talking with Seth Goldman, who's the co-founder of Honest Tea, which is a tea company that makes teas with integrity. Sorry, I stole that from his website. No, it's his joke, not mine. Don't be mad at me.
Okay, Seth, so it's your bad joke that you made my partner repeat. Now I'm mad at both of you.
One of the many names we decided not to use.
All right, now Seth, how did this whole thing come about? I mean, you're really you're not a huge corporation.
No. Not.
Well, tell me how you did this, man.
I have always been thirsty. I used to run.
That's hysterical.
You just said I started a tea company because I've always been thirsty.
Anyway, yeah, Mark was always hungry. That's why we started a restaurant. Yeah, I'm sorry. We interrupted
you. You're hungry,
you.
Right. Yeah, no, I was thirsty. I wasn't finding a drink out there that tasted good but didn't have tons of sugar.
Right.
And one day I just said, all right, this is it. That, you know, I kept looking, and I would be mixing stuff up in the kitchen, and I said, I've got to do something about it. And yeah. I got back in touch with my business school professor, where we had, you know, done a competitive study of the beverage industry. And we had agreed that it's amazing, despite all the options, and there are literally thousands of beverage varieties out there, despite all these choices, there wasn't something like this, you know, that had enough flavor to taste good without
fructose,
yeah.
and tea made from real tea. So yeah. What did you do? How did you turn that from you know, how did you get to quit your day job?
Yeah, well, I had brewed up samples in my kitchen, along with Barry, the co-founder, and brought them in thermoses to the local Whole Foods office, along with an empty Snapple bottle where we pasted some labels on it.
Nice. I like the poetic justice, exactly.
Huh? I went to the buyer, and I sort of mapped out for him. I said, look, here are all the drinks you're selling, and I showed him all the calorie profiles, and the main ingredient, which was high fructose corn syrup, they're basically all the same. And then I said, we are going to offer you something that's just different from what you have. So he was willing to give it a try. He didn't know if it would work or not, but he said, we'll take, what do you say, about, you know, 15,000 bottles. And there was this big pause when I read
it. My kitchen's not
like,
that
oh,
big.
Oh, boy, I can't make that in my kitchen.
Yeah, yeah, try it. That's good. Okay, I'm glad you're trying it.
Okay, when do you want them delivered?
Exactly.
So how did you make it? How did you pull it off?
We just scrambled. We went to a bunch of different bottling plants and asked them if they, you know, had any ideas. And as we talked about, it wasn't something they do traditionally. So the first production run, we got a bunch of these the filter bags, like they used to clean up a pool or after an oil spill.
Right.
Uh-huh.
And we found some that hadn't been used for those purposes, were brand new.
Excellent.
And I
know you guys are really into recycling and things like that, so I was a little concerned for a second.
No, we started with fresh ones and put tea leaves in it and dunked them in boiling water, and it was messy. I mean, the first production run, one of the bags broke, and so we had to sort of get, you know, figure that out, and then we had a sort of an inch of tea leaves on the bottom of the bottle.
Okay,
but
I make a mess in my kitchen making iced tea,
exactly.
So I can only imagine what you're doing with
15,000
bottles.
Right, but it did. We did get the product to market, and we did. Once we got it there, we just, and you know, me personally, along with a few interns, gave out tons and tons of samples. So we were in every store several times a month, and by the end of the first summer, we were the best-selling tea in those. It was just, you know, 17 stores at that time.
Right,
right.
But we took that success and started, you know, selling it elsewhere, and I would say certainly refining the way we made the tea. We don't use those bags anymore. We've got a better way to do it, and we're now the best-selling brand of organic bottled tea in the country.
Hey, I want to make a couple of points. One is you made a comparison. You made a comparison before about wine and tea, and how tea is one of the most affordable luxuries you can find in the long run. And if you analyze tea as opposed to with wine, the number of flavoring and aroma compounds, it really is the same as wine. It's actually, there are more components in tea than there are in wine.
That's amazing. Tea is the world's second most popular drink, second to water.
Really?
Yeah. In every culture, whether, you know, obviously, you know, one of the things you got is India and China, which are the most populous countries in the world drinking so much tea.
Right.
But almost every culture around the world has a tea that they make. And, it, you know, when I say tea, I mean infusing herbs and water. Because
right.
In some parts of the world, it's like in South America, they'll use something called yerba mate.
Right.
Yerba mate.
Okay, except yerba mate is disgusting.
Oh,
well,
come on.
No, some people like it.
You know, it's funny. I was investigating yerba mate, and so I went to yerbamate.com because I had never had it. And I bought like the special straw spoon you're supposed to have it with, and the special cup, and a pound of yerba mate. Seth, would you like me to send you a half a pound of yerba mate?
We've gotten some requests for it, and we say, boy, it's...
I don't get it, man.
We're going to go with acquired taste. How's
that?
That's right.
That's really what it is.
And an Irish boy never acquired that taste. We go for a different kind of tea. But, you know, I will tell you something else that I like about your product and how we originally came across your product. When we are out there, and I recommend that people do this when you're out in the market, when you're out in a specialty market, pick up whatever beverage, whatever sweet thing, whatever thing it is that has some sweetness to it, and look at the ingredients. Yeah. And if you see that it has high fructose corn syrup, put it back on the shelf.
Put it back.
And if you want to compare beverages, just try something that's sweetened with high fructose corn syrup as opposed to something that's sweetened with sugar. And when you're done with the high fructose corn syrup thing, you'll be like, and you'll want more.
Yeah.
When you do the sugar thing, it'll be clean.
I mean, I'm not a big proponent of soda, but sodas made with sugar taste much better than sodas made with
fructose corn syrup.
They just taste much better. And I don't really understand in this country how... Well, I do understand because they're addictive. How soda became so popular and things like real tea has seems to have almost fallen by the wayside. And
well, I will say that I think people are catching on because
they are finally, but it's been a long road.
Yeah, we've been growing. We've been doing this for 7 years, and mm-hmm. some years harder than others. But boy, this year, for whatever reason, we're growing way far faster than we had imagined.
Well, we've only been on the air for 6 months, so we can only take credit for half of that.
Well, happy to give credit where whoever wants to take it.
Exactly. Now, Seth, one of the things I want to talk about, and we only have a minute right now, but we'll come back and talk about it a little more in a moment. You take you've established your company to have a real sense of social responsibility as well, and you work with the Crow Indians. And you work where you source your products. You're taking great care to work with the communities where you source your product. What drives you there, and what are you doing in that regard?
I've always had an interest in that, and more actually worked in nonprofits before. But the thing about tea is it's enjoyed by the world's wealthiest cultures and produced by some of the poorest. So you can, just in the course of business, really create wealth in these communities without being a charity, without giving mm-hmm. money away.
Well, and you know what? It's funny. We talk about sustainable agriculture. But one of the things we talk about in producing sustainable agriculture, because we work with a number of different causes who work with sustainable agriculture, we work with farmers, both wine grape farmers and food farmers, and to establish a sustainable business where it makes money for you as well as them is something that is a continuing engine that keeps going on.
That's right.
We're going to take a break and come back in just a moment. I want to talk with you more about the Crow Indians and what exactly you're doing for your social responsibility.
It's really very interesting.
You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we're talking with Seth Goldman from Honest Tea.
Seth, you have on your website a quote from a tea taster, J. Thomas Company Tea House in Calcutta. And the quote is, "With hard work, proper packing, and withering, it's possible to transform a 50 rupee per kilo tea into a 100 rupee per kilo tea. With similar hard work, one can take a 100 rupee per kilo tea and make it a 200 rupee per kilo tea. It is with great ease, however, that one can take a 500 rupee per kilo tea and transform it into a 50 rupee per kilo tea." Why don't you tell us about what you mean by that exactly?
And, of course, you're going to have to give us the conversion rate for a rupee.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, you can just say the same thing with dollars, which is most people really aren't, even going back to your talk about country time, it's like you used to make at home. We make tea probably better than most people make it at home because most people, when they make it at home, don't brew the tea to the right temperature.
Right.
They often oversteep the tea.
Right.
The tea is often... cut or a lot of the flavors released before the tea is brewed. And so every step of the way, tea is an agricultural product. It is, sold dry, but it's still the kind of thing where flavor can be released if it's not stored properly. It can certainly get overcooked, and in which case it gets acidic and you mm-hmm. get all these tannins
that
come out. So there really is an art to making tea, and it's something that like I said, we in the beginning weren't doing justice to the tea, but it was still a much more authentic taste. And over time, we've really gotten it to a point where we're getting great, great clarity.
And when you deal with agricultural products, if you're dealing with small producers, what you're doing is a great thing for the planet because you're rewarding hard work. Because when people need to sell tea as a commodity and they can't just sell it, and have the hard work for making the better tea rewarded, They don't get the reward for their work. They don't get paid, and you don't get good tea. And I want to congratulate you for making a really great product and being a responsible person in the community as well.
Well, we're trying. I appreciate that. We did bring out the first fair trade bottled tea.
Uh-huh. We saw.
Just in 2003. And that's, you know, like fair trade coffee, where the workers are paid a living wage. And
It's all good, and the company is Honest Tea. Do you have a website to give us?
It's www.honesttea.com.
And you can get that at restaurantguysradio.com, too.
Seth Goldman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Great to be with you.
Closing out the show with a little Billy Joel in your honor,
Honest
Seth.
Honest Tea, Seth. And you can join us tomorrow, where we have the author of the book Mad Cow USA, John Stauber, is going to join us to talk about mad cow disease and some things you may not know, so do join us tomorrow. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450 times 12 noon.